Hello, young lovers, wherever you are. This past weekend was not only Valentine's Day, but it was a special weekend for us over here at Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals. My co-host, Rolando, and our producer, Eddie Z, this weekend got married. Congratulations.
Thank you. Hopefully it was a wonderful wedding. I don't know.
I'm sure it will be.
We're recording this before the wedding, but at this point, if I forgot anything, we're a week away. Literally a week away.
Oh, literally a week away.
But you guys will be hearing this, like, obviously not.
Yes.
The day after the wedding.
The day after. And it was a weekend of love. We hope you enjoyed your weekend. And in honor of this special occasion, we decided to put together a little compilation episode. Where we discuss romance in movies and our opinions on certain films. So we're going to probably play clips from about 6 or 7 different episodes. And we hope that if you haven't listened to them, you go back and listen. And if you have any thoughts that we've had on any of these films, feel free to reach out to us and just, you know, probably reach out and just congratulate Rolando and Eddie for their marriage.
It's true. Thank you, guys, if you do, ahead of time. If you guys have ideas for other love stories that we haven't covered yet in the podcast, by all means, let us know on social media and we'll consider the episode.
Definitely.
We always want to hear from you guys. So if you guys have tips for what we could do to make you guys really enjoy the show, by all means, share them with us.
Yes. But we hope you enjoy our compilation of love movies. And until next time,
stay an original.
As the years passed, he fell into despair and lost all hope. For who could ever learn to love a beast?
I understand some of the problems that people have, like, you know, I think the usual comparison that this one gets is, like, if you had to, like, give this one a one word title, it's basically Stockholm Syndrome, right?
That's a 2 words title.
Well, a different title, right? And usually people go to, this is a Stockholm Syndrome story, right? He kidnaps her and she ends up falling in love with your captor.
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna have to give my feminist twist on this in the sense where it's like, I do have a problem with the fact that, you know, this is a movie, along with almost every other, like, princess fairy tale movie that Disney has ever made, that kind of, except for perhaps Frozen, which is, you know, an exception to the rule. They're finally changing the way they do princess movies. But where, you know, girls pretty much, whenever they go through something, they go through something alone and in isolation. They don't have a buddy with them. And if they do have a buddy, it's an animal or it's an inanimate object. And then it could be, like, argued that it's all in this girl's head or whatever. But she goes through it alone. She's forced into isolation. Nobody understands her. You know, like, she's always the outcast. Belle's the outcast.
Right.
Ariel was the outcast.
Yeah.
Who else? Cinderella was the outcast.
Yeah.
So, and then, like, these young girls grow up like, well, you know, nobody understands me. I don't know what it's like. And from my own misery and my own isolation, I need to be saved by a Prince Charming. And I don't like that message that girls are being subconsciously fed in their youth. And then my other problem is that in the movie, after the whole introduction and that horrible spell is put on a young boy, presumably, if you do the math,
he, according to Be Our Guest, they mentioned the lyrics, like, it's been 10 years that they've been under the spell. So he's supposed to be 21 when the spell ends, like, when he dies. So he was 11 when the spell was cast upon him.
So some, like, fucking bitter, salty enchantress shows up and puts a spell on an 11-year-old.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, the 11-year-old spoiled child who is a prince is, you know, not a nice person. Like, who would have known?
They corrected that in the remake, though, and I'm not going to harp too much on that, but in the remake, I have more of a problem with it because you're a man of like, a certain age, so you should know better. And we're going to cover that when we get to it. But, why, like, they end it with, for who could ever learn to love a beast? And I'm like, why does someone need to learn to love a beast? Why can't he learn to love himself? And then, like, nobody has to learn to love him. And it's just like, he learned how to be a better person because that's how the spell got put on him in the first place.
Right.
You know, so hello.
So I'm going to disagree with you a little, though. I don't think Belle was one of those few exceptions where she wasn't rescued per se. She was kidnapped by the beast because, I don't know, that's the deal that she cut with the beast to protect her father. But at the end of the day, like, she kind of was the one who put herself in that situation just so that way her dad didn't have to, like, live out that sentence, right?
Yes.
She was also the one who was able to look past the beast's icy horrendousness to fall in love with him and stuff. And she was also the one who, I mean, she was teaching teaching him how to read because, what's it called? The kid was illiterate. He was an illiterate prince.
Yes, know? There are exceptions to it that make it different than, say, Cinderella or something else, but it still is teaching young girls that regardless.
I don't think it was necessarily teaching young girls that they had to wait for the prince because in this case, it was just like, throw you. Well,
you're
I mean, all right.
So, an exceptionally right, bright, gifted girl who reads a lot, and yet you're going to, you know.
But at least it was teaching girls trap. That, like, you know, to be a little different, like, as opposed to. So I think with the Little Mermaid, she was more prone to, like, just waiting around for, you know, she was just waiting for. Even she wasn't waiting for the prince to come and save her. Like, she was just waiting to get into that part of that world.
No, she gave up her voice for a boy.
She did. All right, fine. She gave up her voice for a
and
boy.
And her family and her life. And she still, at the end of it, chose it, like, that life over her family, who she never appreciated and felt isolated from for her own reasons.
But you're right. But here's the thing. She has choices. I mean, these are the women are making the choices.
Yes.
I think, as opposed to the earlier Disney films where they were being rescued, they were put in precarious situations by their own, by forces outside of
yes, their Snow White and Sleeping right? Beauty in particular.
Like, at least these protagonists in these new Disney movies, specifically Beauty and the Beast.
The Renaissance ones.
Right. They were the ones who were putting themselves in these situations. They were more proactive, at least. But no, I don't know if I would classify as Stockholm Syndrome. I feel like she wasn't in the castle long enough to develop Stockholm Syndrome.
Dracula. They could have expanded a little bit more, like they, you know, they implied that Jonathan Harker had sex and stuff with him, but I guess though that would be giving a little bit too much sexuality that it
I
needed.
Mean, the way Dracula mounts his victims is so sexual too.
Yeah.
Like, same thing. Like, he killed one of the shipmates who was already, like, bleeding out from the leg.
Yeah.
And he was already hungry, so he's just like, the way he just mounts it is so hypersexualized.
Yeah.
In a way that, because already, I feel like biting the neck is already such a sexual movement.
Yeah, like right? Being on top of them.
Right. So just like to add that extra, like literally just humping over you
yeah.
is kind of that added elevation that I think. And they only did those two scenes that I remember with men.
True.
All right. They never did those with women and stuff. So they really, I actually do like this Dracula because he's very pansexual. He's just like.
Yeah. No. Yeah. That's the nicest yeah. part. I've always thought of Dracula as a pansexual mm-hmm. too. So I'm glad that brides mean to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara Streisand, Kris Kristofferson.
Watch closely now.
A Star is Born.
And and he's this like alcoholic rock star. And let's just say it, my least favorite guy is this one.
Agreed.
So he's such an asshole.
He is my least favorite Norman iteration in of all four.
All of them. He's the fucking worst.
He is the worst. First of all. None of the other guys, well, all right, spoiler guys, he dies, but like none of the other guys ever cheated on her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that is a point where I was just like, you are the garbage one. Like, yeah, you are the worst one.
Yeah. He beats people up like on the regular. Yeah. Like, usually Norman has to get to that point. Right. On the fucking regular, this guy beats people up.
He's just doing cocaine. He's
says
shooting
fuck
at
you
helicopters.
To his fans all the time. Yeah. He's a privileged little asshole. Yeah. He shoots at helicopters.
He shoots at helicopters.
In his pool in Beverly Hills. He's such an asshole.
He's the worst. He was the worst. Just riding his motorcycle. I actually could not wait for him to die. So that's this was the one where I was just like, I know, you know what? Like, you need to die. You
and
need to go.
And what killed me is that they alluded to the fact that it could have been accidental, one.
Yes.
And this is the only one in all four films and where she interacts with his dead body.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that, but you're right. Yes, yes.
And it's this whole thing where she's like, no, and like the pain of like seeing him dead and wanting him to not be dead.
Yeah.
And then they have this moment where she hears his voice and she's like, John Norman! And she like goes around the whole mansion.
Because he leaves it broke.
But
he's in such debt to the U.S. government that now she's also broke. So on top of that, so not only did you embarrass your wife at the fucking Grammys, you fucking cheated on her and you left her broke at it after it's all said and done. You are the worst.
Seriously, this is I think the most devastating portrayal of toxic masculinity, because this Esther disappointed me, because like we said, this is the only form of Norman that cheats on her.
It is the only Norman that cheats on her. I mean, he dies immediately after, rightfully so,
but
she
first probably,
you know what,
she
cut the link, she cut the brake line. That's the story.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, she murdered him.
Yeah, she's that's like laying in bed listening to him drive away. Like, oh, that's great.
It was just like, little does he know.
Yeah. But she catches him in bed. You know, she's not okay. She beats the shit out of him.
Yeah, like this
says
hoe.
She hates
she
him.
Just like this groupie.
This stupid groupie. Yeah, but what prompts him to get into bed with her is that she doesn't want it. This hippie pretty much breaks into John Howard's house, and he thinks that she wants an interview with her, with him. But she doesn't want an interview with him. She's like, hey, I'll do anything for an interview with Esther.
But then she does,
and that was too much for this guy's ego.
Well, he does, like, she does say immediately, it's like he couldn't even get it up, basically.
Yeah,
like,
he's
so drunk.
Charles Boyer and Irene Dunne in Love Affair, tied to each other heart and soul, yet they have no right to love. Few pictures can boast of such exciting love sequences, such sentimental scenes, such fire and fury of a Boyer desperately in love, fighting the woman he loves, fighting the world he hates, to keep the one thing so vital to his happiness.
So, let's go. You're the one who recommended this movie, so...
I did.
Why?
Well, because, you know, it's Valentine's Day week and all that stuff. I was like, we should do romance films, and I just, like, some of the ones that popped into my head is, like, really famous and kind of like I think would be fun for us to talk about were these films, because there's three of them and they're pretty different, but they're also kind of not, and they're very lauded as films.
Okay.
You like it? The first one. Let's do.
Okay,
we're
so
starting
we're going
with
order,
this one.
So did I like this one? Yeah. Not really. I think maybe I didn't like it just because I just didn't feel their love at all. So you mentioned that they started an affair on the boat. I just want to clarify that. It wasn't a physical affair. It was
an emotional
affair.
Which is very, though, like, it's an affair.
Sure. No, I agree with you. I think sometimes emotional cheating could be worse than physical cheating.
Yeah. Although, I think that, remember, this is 1939, so this is the era of the production code.
Oh, they don't even think they knew what emotions are in the 1930s, right? Or any psychology?
Oh, honey, don't dismiss it that badly. But, like, here's the thing. Like, the code makes us think that these people were prudes back then. Mm-hmm. But, like, it was illegal to depict things like this on cinema.
So, but
because of the code. They had a very strict code.
Could they imply that they had a physical?
So they had to imply in the ways that the censors wouldn't catch it and then say, no, you can't do that.
What were the implications that they had a physical affair?
So to me, if you just kind of like read between the transitions and stuff, like from when, you know, they're eating and everybody's watching them, it's like, why don't we get out of here and stuff? Like, it can be implied very much that they banged.
I don't know if I got that in this one.
In this one, you got it in the other one?
I got it maybe in the 1950s one.
Yeah.
But not this one. This one I didn't feel like. I actually thought they were, I don't know, they just felt like friends. I just didn't, I couldn't wrap my head around, like, kind of their relationship.
Okay.
And when they go to see the grandmother, again, it's just like, yeah, you mentioned, like, how, oh, my God, this is the real Terry. Oh, my God, this is the real him. But it's just like, you're seeing your grandma. You're putting on an act.
Yeah.
I don't know the way I act like my, like, the way I acted in front of my mom or my grandparents, my grandma when she was alive, not at all the same person that I was. In reality. So those are just putting on airs. You can't fall in love with that person. That person is not real. That's actually more of a fictional person than the person I am on my own.
And I agree with you, which is why I think in this film, that's why I very much thought that it was implied that they banged, because the only thing that I really picked up on them was that their sexual attraction to each other was strong. Like, she is just, I think Irene Dunne, she's like, she's really witty and she's really, like, fast talker and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then he's just, like, this sexy French guy. So, like, you could see why they would look at each other and just flirt back and forth and just totally, like, let's fuck. Mm-hmm. But then, like, when they added the elements of, like, oh, this is, like, using my grandma to win bonus points and see me as, like, this, you know, like, I'm a more sensitive guy.
I suppose. But, like.
But it is an act.
But that's and also, like, he falls in love with her, right? Because she can sing with Grammy.
Yeah.
Like, as she plays the piano, she's just like, oh, like, it's just
well,
like,
what
like,
fake ass cool. lives were these like, people living? That these were like the real moments for them. Yeah.
This doesn't equate love. This is, I don't know what's going on, to be quite honest. If I brought, let's say if I was a heterosexual and I brought my girlfriend to be my grandmother. They start singing together. I'm just like, oh, you guys are crazy and this is over.
True. I think that the film was too short in the sense where I agree with you. They didn't really dive into their relationship. But at the same time, I think that that plot and everything that comes with it, the more you drag it out and the more you put emphasis on it, sometimes it depends, like the faker it kind of feels.
I love how they established this like passionate love affair.
Yes.
Because I think it's something that gets translated very well. You know, you were talking about memes and stuff. I think one of my favorite memes to come from the Addams Family is basically just the two of both Morticia and Gomez together. I think they're just like looking just together. And it's just like, this could be us, but you always playing. Right. Because like their, I think their love is so strong, so powerful. It's just like those, those are real relationship goals. As a society, we, this is, I think maybe, their love is more realistic in a weird sense. Like, yeah, they could be passionate, madly in love with each other. But like what makes them so kind of real is just like the love that they have for both themselves and like their family. It's not, it's like a weird, maybe it's not like, maybe it shouldn't be. Maybe it's like too romanticized about what love could be. But like their love is, seems so pure, which is so weird considering like the world that they're building.
True.
You know?
A very sexual love too, like
super really hypersexual. Yeah,
yeah.
I will say that's the thing, and I think it's funny. I didn't remember necessarily because when I think of Addams Family, obviously the one I go to is like the '90s movies. However, when I was rewatching these, I was like, oh, I forgot how adorable this Morticia is, and I forgot like how cute the whole family looks.
Yeah,
you know, and I think, but this Morticia, like her waist is just like cinched to the max. She's like that hourglass figure. She's hot.
She is hot.
She's just a hot lady.
Ocean's 8, all-female revival of the Ocean series. Now, so her partner, the Brad Pitt, if you will, is the greatest actress on earth, Cate Blanchett.
Oh, she's so good in this movie.
She's so fucking good. She's so, so beautiful. Her outfits were unbelievably amazing.
Did she not give you lesbian vibes?
Wait, the character?
Her character.
Yeah. The two of them. Yeah, I thought they were going to les out of the part. I thought so too.
I was very disappointed that she they introduced her boyfriend, ex-boyfriend, like halfway through the movie. Yeah,
because when they do that really unnecessary historical part of it.
Yeah, the flashback.
The flashback 10 years ago. She was like, me and Lou were going through a rough patch. And I'm like, oh my God, does that mean you guys are like breaking up? Like, I really wanted them to go through with it. So as far as I'm concerned, they're fucking lesbians.
Like, she could be bi.
She could be bi. You know. Yeah. They were in a lesbian relationship. But yeah, I loved. I mean, I'm such a fucking Cate Blanchett.
You know what? I mean, you know what they say: when there's a penis, there's a problem. And Lou, not Lou, people say that. And Claude Becker was the penis that came between Lou and
Debbie.
Where can people find us, Nicole?
Well, first you can email us at remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Facebook, facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. We're on Twitter, but the best place to hit us up is at Instagram, @remakesrebootsrevivals.
Yes, and you know, if you guys post something good, we might read it on the air. It just helps, you know, create content for us guys. So definitely help us out.
Until next time,
stay unoriginal.